AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Key elements of the George Floyd Act. Let's commit ourselves to make the words of Tyler's mom true. Something good must come from this. Something good. And all of us. All of us. Folks, it's difficult, but it's simple. All of us in this chamber, we need to rise to this moment. We can't turn away. Let's do what we know in our hearts that we need to do. Let's come together to finish the job on police reform. Do something. Do something. That was the plea of parents who lost their children in Uvalde. I met with every one of them. Do something about gun violence. Thank God. Thank God we did. Passing the most sweeping gun safety law in three decades. That includes things like that the majority of responsible gun owners already support. Enhanced background checks for 18 to 21 years old. Red flag laws, keeping guns out of the hands of people who are a danger to themselves and others. But we know our work is not done. Join us tonight is Brandon Say, a 26-year-old hero. Brandon put his college dreams on hold to be at his mom's side. His mom's side when she was dying from cancer. And Brandon... Brandon now works at the dance studio started by his grandparents. And 2 weeks ago, during the Lunar New Year celebrations, he heard the studio door close, and he saw a man standing there pointing a semi-automatic pistol at him. He thought he was going to die, but he thought about the people inside. And in that instant, he found the courage to act and wrestle the semi-automatic pistol away from the gunman who had already killed 11 people in another dance studio. 11. He saved lives. It's time we do the same. Ban assault weapons now. Ban them now. Once and for all. I led the fight to do that in 1994. And in 10 years, that ban was law and mass shootings went down. After we let it expire in the Republican administration, mass shootings tripled. Let's finish the job and ban these assault weapons. And let's also come together on immigration. Make it a bipartisan issue once again. We know we now have a record number of personnel working to secure the border, arresting 8,000 human smugglers, seizing over 23,000 pounds of fentanyl in just the last several months. We've launched a new border plan last month. Unlawful migration from Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela has come down 97% as a consequence of that. But American border problems won't be fixed until Congress acts. If we don't pass my comprehensive immigration reform, at least pass my plan to provide the equipment and officers to secure the border. And a pathway to citizenship for dreamers, those on temporary status, farm workers, essential workers. Here in the People's House, it's our duty to protect all the people's rights and freedoms. Congress must restore the right and the... Congress must restore the right that was taken away in Roe v. Wade and protect Roe v. Wade. Give every woman a constitutional right. The Vice President and I are doing everything to protect access to reproductive health care and safeguard patient safety. But already, more than a dozen states are enforcing extreme abortion bans. Make no mistake about it. If Congress passes a national ban, I will veto it. But let's also pass the Bipartisan Equality Act to ensure LGBTQ Americans, especially transgender young people, can live with safety and dignity. Our strength is not just the example of our power, but the power of our example. Let's remember the world's watching. I spoke from this chamber 1 year ago, just days after Vladimir Putin unleashed his brutal attack against Ukraine. A murderous assault, evoking images of death and destruction Europe suffered in World War II. Putin's invasion has been a test for the ages, a test for America, a test for the world. Would we stand for the most basic of principles? Would we stand for sovereignty? We stand for the right of people to live free of tyranny. Will we stand for the defense of democracy? For such defense matters to us because it keeps peace and prevents open season on would-be aggressors and threatens our prosperity. 1 year later, we know the answer. Yes, we would, and we did. We did. And together, we did what America always does at our best. We led. We united NATO. We built a global coalition. We stood against Putin's aggression. We stood with the Ukrainian people. Tonight, we're once again joined by Ukraine's ambassador to the United States. She represents not just her nation, but the courage of her people. Our ambassador is here. We're united in our support of your country. Will you stand so we can all take a look at you? Thank you. Because we're going to stand with you as long as it takes. Our nation is working for more freedom, more dignity, more peace, not just in Europe, but everywhere. Before I came to office, the story was about how the People's Republic of China was increasing its power and America was failing in the world. Not anymore. We made clear, and I made clear in my personal conversations, which have been many, with President Xi, that we seek competition, not conflict. But I will make no apologies that we're investing in, to make America stronger, investing in American innovation and industries that will define the future that China intends to be dominating, investing in our alliances and working with our allies to protect advanced technologies so they will not be used against us, modernizing our military to safeguard stability and deter aggression. Today, we're in the strongest position in decades to compete with China or anyone else in the world. Anyone else in the world. And I'm committed. I'm committed to work with China where we can advance American interests and benefit the world. But make no mistake about it. As we made clear last week, if China threatens our sovereignty, we will act to protect our country, and we did. Look, let's be clear. Winning the competition should unite all of us. We face serious challenges across the world. But in the past 2 years, democracies have become stronger, not weaker. Autocracy has grown weaker, not stronger. Name me a world leader who changed places with Xi Jinping. Name me one. Name me one. America's rallying the world to meet those challenges, from climate to global health, to food insecurity, to terrorism, to territorial aggression. Allies are stepping up, spending more, and doing more. Look, the bridges we're forming between partners in the Pacific and those in the Atlantic, and those who bet against America are learning how wrong they are. It's never, ever been a good bet to bet against America. Never. Well, when I came to office, most assured that bipartisanship assumed was impossible, but never believed it. That's why a year ago I offered a unity agenda to the nation as I stood here. We made real progress together. We passed a law making it easy for doctors to prescribe effective treatments for opioid addiction. We passed the gun safety law making historic investments in mental health. We launched the ARPA-H drive for breakthrough in the fights against cancer, Alzheimer's, and diabetes, and so much more. We passed the Heath Robinson Pact Act, named after the late Iraq War veteran whose story about exposure to toxic burn kits I shared here last year. I understand something about those burn pits, but there's so much more to do. We can do it together. Joining us tonight is a father named Doug from Newton, New Hampshire. He wrote Jill, my wife, a letter, and me as well, about his courageous daughter, Courtney. A contagious laugh, his sister's best friend, her sister's best friend. He shared a story all too familiar to millions of Americans and many of you in the audience. Courtney discovered pills in high school. It spiraled into addiction and eventually death from a fentanyl overdose. She was just 20 years old. Describing the last 8 years without her, Doug said, "There's no worse pain." Yet their family has turned pain to purpose, working to end the stigma and change laws. He told us he wants to start a journey toward American recovery. Doug, we're with you. Fentanyl is killing more than 70,000 Americans a year. Big, you got it. So let's launch a major surge to stop fentanyl production in the sale and trafficking, with more drug detection machines, inspection cargo, stop pills and powder at the border. Working with couriers like FedEx to inspect more packages for drugs. Strong penalties to crack down on fentanyl trafficking. Second, let's do more on mental health, especially for our children. When millions of young people are struggling with bullying, violence, trauma, we owe them greater access to mental health care at their schools. We must finally hold social media companies accountable for experimenting they're doing running children for profit. It's time to pass bipartisan legislation to stop big tech from collecting personal data on our kids and teenagers online, ban targeted advertising to children, and impose stricter limits on the personal data that companies collect on all of us. Third, let's do more to keep this nation's one truly sacred obligation to equip those we send into harm's way and care for them and their families when they come home. Job training, job placement for veterans and their spouses as they come to return to civilian life. Helping veterans afford the rent, because no one should be homeless in America, especially someone who served the country. Dennis McDonough is here, of the VA. We had a first real discussion when I asked him to take the job. I'm glad he did. We were losing up to 25 veterans a day on suicide. Now we're losing 17 a day to the silent scourge of suicide. 17 veterans a day are committing suicide, more than all the people being killed in the wars. Folks, VA is doing everything it can, including expanding mental health screening, proven programs that recruits veterans to help other veterans understand what they're going through, get them the help they need. We got to do more. And fourth, last year, Jill and I reignited the cancer moonshot that I was able to start with President Obama asked me to lead our administration on this issue. Our goal is to cut the cancer death rates at least by 50% in the next 25 years. Turn more cancers from death sentences to treatable diseases. Provide more support for patients and their families. It's personal to so many of us in this audience. Joining us are Morris and Candice, an Irishman and a daughter of immigrants from Panama. They met and fell in love in New York City and got married in the same chapel Jill and I got married in New York City. Kindred spirits. He wrote us a letter about his little daughter, Ava, and I saw her just before I came over. She was just a year old when she was diagnosed with rare kidney disease, cancer. After 26 blood transfusions, 11 rounds of radiation, 8 rounds of chemo, one kidney removed, given a 5% survival rate. He wrote how in the darkest moments he thought, if she goes, I can't stay. Many of you have been through that as well. Jill and I understand that like so many of you. And he read Jill's book describing our family's cancer journey and how we tried to steal moments of joy where we could with Beau. For them, that glimmer of joy was the half smile of their baby girl. It meant everything to them. They never gave up hope. Little Ava never gave up hope. She turns 4 next month.
They just found out Ava's beating the odds, is on her way to being cured of cancer. And she's watching from the White House tonight if she's not asleep already. For the lives we can save. For the lives we can save and the lives we've lost, let this be a truly American moment that rallies the country and the world together and prove that we can still do big things. 20 years ago, under the leadership of President Bush and countless advocates and champions, he undertook a bipartisan effort through PEPFAR to transform the global fight against HIV/AIDS. It's been a huge success. He thought big. He thought large. He moved. I believe we can do the same thing with cancer. Let's end cancer as we know it. Cure some cancers once and for all. Folks, there's one reason why we've been able to do all of these things. Our democracy itself. It's the most fundamental thing of all. With democracy, everything's possible. Without it, nothing is. The last few years, our democracy has been threatened and attacked, put at risk, put to the test in this very room on January the 6th. And then just a few months ago, an unhinged big lie assailed and unleashed a political violence at the home of the then Speaker of the House of Representatives, using the very same language the insurrectionists used as they stalked these halls and chanted on January 6th. Here tonight in this chamber is a man who bears the scars of that brutal attack, but is as tough and as strong and as resilient as they get. My friend Paul Pelosi. Paul, stand up. But such a heinous act should have never happened. We must all speak out. There's no place for political violence in America. We have to protect the right to vote, not suppress the fat fundamental right. Honor the results of our elections, not subvert the will of the people. We have to uphold the rule of law and restore trust in our institutions of democracy. We must give hate and extremism in any form no safe harbor.
Democracy must not be a partisan issue. It's an American issue. Every generation of Americans has faced a moment where they haven't been called to protect our democracy, defend it, stand up for it. And this is our moment. My fellow Americans, we meet tonight at an inflection point, one of those moments that only a few generations ever face, where the direction we now take is going to decide the course of this nation for decades to come. We're not bystanders of history.
We're not powerless before the forces that confront us. It's within our power of we, the people. We're facing the test of our time. We have to be the nation we've always been at our best, optimistic, hopeful, forward-looking. A nation that embraces light over dark, hope over fear, unity over division, stability over chaos. We have to see each other not as enemies, but as fellow Americans. We're good people. The only nation in the world built on an idea. The only one. Other nations are defined by geography, ethnicity. But we're the only nation based on an idea that all of us, every one of us, is created equal in the image of God. A nation that stands as a beacon to the world. A nation in a new age of possibilities. So I've come to fulfill my constitutional obligation to report in the State of the Union. And here's my report. Because the soul of this nation is strong, because the backbone of this nation is strong, because the people of this nation are strong, the State of the Union is strong. I'm not new to this place. I stand here tonight having served as long as about any one of you have ever served here. But I've never been more optimistic about our future, about the future of America. Just to remember who we are. We're the United States of America, and there's nothing beyond our capacity if we do it together. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you.
You are listening to State of the Union Address, brought to you locally by the Civic Media Network of radio stations.
News director Terry Bell is breaking down the address and discussing what the president's plans may mean for you.
Our live State of the Union coverage continues here on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
Live coverage of President Biden's State of the Union Address on the Civic Media Radio stations. Terry Bell, joined by Todd Albaugh, host of the Todd Albaugh Show on many Civic Media stations, taking a look at what the president had to say, what it means for the next year for American policy and American vision. And Todd Albaugh, I dare say, one of the feistiest speeches, not only from the dais, but I cannot recall as much give and take between the president and those in attendance.
Terry, I've been watching State of the Union speeches since I was young. My first one I can remember was Ronald Reagan, right after he became president. I don't recall a better, more entertaining, a State of the Union address that held my attention. And as you said, one that was a give and take between the executive and the legislative branch. It was on the verge of prime minister's questions.
I was going to say it was kind of reminiscent of Parliament and the prime minister over in England. It was that feisty, I would dare say. I like to use the word feisty.
Absolutely, it was feisty. And I found it one of Joe Biden's better, if not perhaps the best speech that I've ever seen him give.
We have a panel of experts joining us. You're familiar with a lot of these names. Joe Zepecki, a veteran political strategist. Bill McCoshin, former chief of staff to Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson and secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Commerce. Matt Flynn will join us in a bit, host of the Matt Flynn Direct Show and former chairman of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Why don't we get started with Bill McCoshin? And Bill, I'm just curious to know what you thought of the speech.
Was tough to watch. I didn't agree with Todd's analysis you know, oh my goodness.
What did the president get wrong?
75 minutes of rambling all over the place. Let's just say Joe Biden is no Ronald Reagan, no Bill Clinton, and no Barack Obama as it comes to speech going.
What in particular do you take issue with what the president had to say?
Listen, I think he started on the right tone when he went with the bipartisanship and recognizing Kevin McCarthy as the new speaker. I think that was smart. I think it was classy. After that, it sort of went downhill. He attacked the Republicans on several occasions during the speech. They even interacted with them on at least two occasions during the speech, which was highly unusual, where he kept telling them, check the facts, check the facts. You know, I'm not sure that speech is going to work out very well for the president. You know, we'll see how much of it he uses tomorrow. We'll understand the big themes when he's in Madison tomorrow, speaking at the labor union training center in DeForest. And, you know, anytime the president comes to the state of Wisconsin, I think it's a good thing, regardless of which party they're from. I think it's good for the state to highlight what's going on here. And my guess is he'll highlight infrastructure tomorrow like he did tonight. But I'm not sure he had people hanging on every thread for 75 minutes tonight.
Stay right there, Bill. Don't go away. You want to hear from Joe Zepecki now. Good evening, Joe. Welcome to the broadcast.
How's everybody doing? Glad to be here.
Glad to have you along. So what are your impressions?
Well, listen, it was a long speech. I think Bill and I are both at the age in our careers where we're like, you know, a lot of this theater is just that, you know, the back and forth, the who's clapping, the who's standing up. You know, more than once today it occurred to me, Jimmy Carter, one year, sent his State of the Union in writing. And maybe if we got back to that, some of the showmanship that we see, we could send it the way of the dodo bird and we might all be better off. But listen, in terms of the speech itself, States of the Union addresses are not actually ever that historically memorable, right? When you go and look at the monuments, which I had the chance to be in DC recently, you know, farewell addresses and inaugural addresses are the ones that stand the test of time. It's very rare for a State of the Union to really break through in terms of like a legacy defining historical moment because they're really hard to do. You have to do a lot of things. You have to speak to domestic affairs and international affairs, and oftentimes they feel like a checklist of issues. And so, you know, the best ones try to tell a story and have a through line that you can grab onto. You know, I think the line the president tried to walk tonight was saying we have made progress charting that, whether it is on manufacturing job growth, whether it is on competitiveness with China and the CHIPS Act, whether it is trying to define this word possibility as central to the American spirit, you know, weaving in some moments that I thought were very emotionally touching. And, you know, Ava turned 4, you know, Tyree's mother saying something good must come of this. If you have a few of those moments, if you have a through line or two, you did the job. And the way that the public consumes these speeches now is not like us nerds do, where we watch all 75 minutes and even Bill sticks with it for 75 minutes because he knows he has.
You got to give me credit for that.
But most folks are going to see this chopped up in little, you know, 30 to 90 second clips online, you know, one topic at a time. And so, I thought he did the job tonight. Is it gonna change the trajectory of American history and be etched in marble someday? No, probably not. But I don't think anybody expected that going in.
Well, it may not change the trajectory of history, but how can it change the trajectory potentially of the next year? Which is, I think, the real job of a State of the Union.
In one big way, you know, Bill mentioned the sort of the back and forth with the audience. I think there's a certain way of looking at this, which is the president standing in the midst of 535 members of Congress got a deal from even his Republican, you know, counterparts in Congress to not touch Medicare and Social Security in this fight over the debt limit and the budget for the next fiscal year. And so kudos to him. I can't recall another time when I've seen a president sort of negotiate in real time like that, where he was saying, hey, I know it's not all of you, but there are some folks in your party who are willing to put Social Security and Medicare on the chopping block. And when the uproar from Republicans started, he called them out on it. He says, okay, I'll take you at your word. That's off the table. And so if that, in fact, is what happens, that's a win for American seniors. And maybe it can help define the contours of these fights yet to come in Washington.
I believe we have a break coming up. Hold those thoughts. I believe Evan Preston's ready to take us to break, and we will be right back with live coverage of post-mortem of the State of the Union address here on the Civic Media Network of radio stations. Stay with us.
Or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere.
Good to see you, Joe, as always. Bill, I don't see you around, but it's nice to see you.
You're listening to live coverage of the State of the Union Address on the Civic Media Network Rev Radio stations. And as Bill McCosh mentioned, the president is coming to Wisconsin tomorrow. He will be at a labor union trading center just north of Madison in DeForest, as presidents have been doing for about the past 25, 30 years or so now, coming out to different communities in America to keep the message going in the conversation and in the media long after the speech is over. Let's take some topics one at a time. First of all, how do you feel about what the president had to say in particular all about the economy? I'll let either of you take it.
Well, listen, he's going to highlight the stats that he thinks work best for him politically and that tell a story from his vantage point, right? And there are some decent stats. The unemployment rate is low. Manufacturing jobs are increasing. More, you know, there have been jobs recreated since the pandemic. He takes credit for all of them, but I think it's important for your viewers and listeners to understand government doesn't create jobs other than those paid for by taxpayers. So what government does is create an environment where the private sector can create the jobs. So I think he did what any politician would do in that situation, which was take credit for the good news, minimize the bad news. You know, but there are some things he missed. For example, you know, inflation was 1.4% when he took office. It's now 6.5%. Gas was 2.39 when he took office. It's now 3.46. Fixed rate mortgage was 2.6 when he took office. It's now 6.5. So those are things that are hurting the middle class. Actual real wages have gone down while he's been president. And just this week, Terry, ABC News put out a poll. First time in 40 years, more people feel worse off financially over the last 2 years than at any time in history. The last 40 years, 41% of people feel worse off over the last 2 years financially. That's a stunning indictment on the Biden economic policies. And, you know, 67-68% of the people think the nation's on the wrong track. So I think he's trying to tell a good story, but people aren't buying it.
People feeling pessimistic.
I mean, Bill, I feel like you're talking about it as if he was Pollyanna-ish tonight. What I took away from it is like, you know, what he kept going back to is let's finish the job, right? Which was a construct that I didn't particularly love. You and I have talked about this before. My favorite words in all of American, you know, pantheon is a more perfect union. The work is never done, right? This president isn't going to finish the job. Neither is the next one. There's always going to be more to do. But it was a construction that sort of suggests to the American people, we have made progress, and I know that we are not all the way there yet. And so you know, I would take a little bit issue with that characterization. Of course, you are right that any president of any party is going to hang their hat on things like the fastest manufacturing growth in 40 years, the lowest unemployment rate. We've been through the jobs numbers wars, you know, for the last dozen years here in Wisconsin. There is a story to tell. But I thought the president did a nice job of trying to walk that line between painting too rosy a picture and saying, like, listen, folks, we've made some progress. And a lot of it was because of the work of people in this room. Like, I don't actually know that I've heard a president be as magnanimous and sort of bring in the people in the room as often as Joe Biden did tonight, referring to things like the bipartisan infrastructure law, the bipartisan CHIPS Act, just two of the 300 some bills that he signed, which were, you know, had bipartisan support in Congress. And so, you know, to be continued on the jobs front, I'm really interested to hear more about, you know, the labor standards within the Inflation Reduction Act and what particularly the solar industry here in Wisconsin is going to happen in the next 5-6 years. I'm hearing upwards of 20,000 jobs could be created in that sector alone right here in Wisconsin. So there are better days ahead when it comes to the economy. And of course there are, in, you know, 2 years, 3 years out from a pandemic. But, you know, we got to keep the progress going.
Yeah, two reactions to that, Terry and Todd. I think Joe's right. If there was a theme tonight, it was he tried to make bipartisanship the theme, where he, you know, we've solved this, we've solved that, and we're going to continue to work together. I think from a tactical standpoint, that probably makes some sense. I think he lost the Republicans on a couple things tonight, including that battle over Social Security, because that deal was done before he ever got into the chamber. That was never going to happen for Republicans. That's been catnip for Democrats for some time now, and it just simply wasn't going to happen. So, Joe, you can give him a win for that. But I think the problem the president has is, despite these few positive economic signals, and I'm going to give him credit for that, it's not translating into polling for him. People are not giving him credit. They don't feel better. They don't feel more assured personally. And that's where it becomes political. And in some cases, political dynamite. And Todd knows this from his days in politics, too.
We're keeping an eye on the Republican response to the speech. Our producer and engineer, Evan Preston, is keeping an eye on that. We want to bring you that when it becomes available. And Matt Flynn, host of the Matt Flynn Show, has Matt Flynn Direct Show from Civic Media, has joined us now. Good evening, Matt.
Yeah, good evening. It's good to see you. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. And so let me just... My friend Bill McCashin there reminded me of three things. One is, everybody watching this in the whole country realizes that Joe Biden's predecessor was a thief and is on the take from Putin. Every one of them, number one. Number two, what he did with Social Security was masterful, absolutely masterful. He said, you know, you're going to do this, you're going to cut it. And they all go, no, no. He's all right, stand up there. We're all for Social Security. Now, they're going to look really weird trying to flip it around. The third thing is, look, Bill, take a look at what we got. And people's wages are up. Everybody can get a job, any job they want. The polls that you're talking about, every president who's ever existed this far into his term has been rocky in polls. This country is strong because of Joe Biden. He's brought NATO together. He's brought an alliance in the Pacific together. People know that. So who do you got to put up against him? Trump? What? DeSantis? Nikki Haley? Pompeo? Are you kidding me?
I think, Matt, I'm just telling you, the country is ready for a new generation of leadership. We're done with 80-year-old presidents, whether it's Trump or him. I think you're going to see a fresh face on the field, and that's what's going to happen in November.
Let's consider
now,
what.
Listen, I'm going to push back on a couple of things. On the wages issue, the truth is real wages are down over the last couple of years. They can't keep up with inflation, and every economist will tell you that. So, you know, the middle class. He spent a lot of time talking about the middle class tonight. They're not getting ahead under this administration. Yeah, at least not yet.
$20 an hour at Walmart and in some restaurants. $20 an hour. That's way ahead of inflation.
Anybody not when you're paying right four or now. $5 for gas, your heating bill is higher, your mortgage is higher. I mean, all of that counts, Matt.
Let's consider what the president had to say on a number of issues concerning public health, everything from cancer to COVID-19 waging battle against any number of diseases and how to pay for it. How did the president do on that? Joe Zepecki, we'll start with you.
Yeah, well, I thought that was one of the stronger parts of the speech. You know, the Inflation Reduction Act, among the other things it did, was the biggest movement forward in terms of lowering costs and expanding access to healthcare since Obamacare passed during President Obama's first term. And so I thought the president very effectively talked about, you know, why a $35 per month cap on out-of-pocket insulin costs for seniors on Medicare, which is effective as of January 1st, is really important. And we didn't mention this in sort of the setup, but the other thing you have to try and do in a State of the Union, you know, you're juggling all these priorities, is you got to lay out some things you want to do in the next Congress. And I thought he very clearly made the case for why this Congress and this president should pass a law to cap insulin costs at $35 per month out of pocket for all Americans, right? The drug companies will still be doing fine. He talked about, you know, the changes under the law that will allow Medicare to finally negotiate for lower drug costs. All of that is, you know, listen, none of it is a silver bullet that's going to cure all of the ails when it comes to real wage growth and this and that. But it's progress, right? And it shows that this president is fighting to lower health care costs, which we know chew up too much of a family's budget. And in terms of the moonshot, you know, that was started when he was vice president and trying to tackle cancer, it is aspirational. I'm sure every single one of us in this Zoom right now and everyone listening can get on board with, we can do more. We went to the moon, for crying out loud. If we, you know, when we look at what we've done as a country, we can figure out how to manage cancer, how to cure cancer, how to make sure it is not a death sentence. And part of what is so important about these types of addresses is that aspiration, is laying out the hopes for where we go as a country. We want to be the country that figures this out. We don't want it to be somebody in Europe. We don't want it to be somebody in Asia. This is our corner, right? American innovation and ingenuity and stick-to-itiveness. And so I thought that was a real high point for the president.
So we have, you know, matters such as, you know, capping the price of insulin. That seems like a notion that everybody can get behind. Is that, in fact, something everybody can get behind?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, frankly, he copied Trump on that. Trump did something very similar when he was president. Biden did away with it with an executive order in his first couple of days as president. And then he redid it in a slightly different form. Yeah, I'm for that. I think that's good. I mean, the reality is, there are a lot too many people suffering with diabetes across the country. Part of that is a whole nother issue about our diet and our exercise and being locked down for 2 years. Even more people are obese than ever before. So, yeah, I think that's a good thing and probably something that the Congress can agree with them on.
Let's bring Todd Alba into the conversation. Todd, do you have any questions for our panel?
I just want to go back to a couple of things. It's kind of the same issue, but one for Bill McCosh and then for both Matt and Joe. Bill, we talked a little bit about what the president did talk about, the highlights tonight. Things that, and this was pointed out by Benji Sarlin from Semaphore tonight on Twitter. I was following him. And, you know, buy American, supply chains back from China, lots of deals, record jobs, non-college workers. These are all things that President Trump would love to campaign on now that he's going back for a second run at this. It seems like Joe Biden is kind of playing on Trump's turf here, and it's playing into a lot of people that in Wisconsin, places like I'm from, out in Richland Center in southwest Wisconsin, your old boss, Tommy Thompson, Elroy, those are things that play out there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I think that was sort of one of the underlying themes in this thing, Todd, tonight, was he's trying to get back working people. Right. A lot of those folks, he'll be at the LEUNA site tomorrow in DeForest, the labor union training center in DeForest, Wisconsin. A lot of the guys he's going to be looking at voted for Donald Trump, not for him. That's the reality. Over the course of the last couple of elections, working people migrated towards Trump. He had a populism that was very attractive to them. He spoke to issues that they cared about. Biden did a lot of that tonight to try and bring them back. And now he's going, you know, directly into their turf tomorrow. Which, you know, frankly, if you're going to run for re-election, politics is all about addition. So it's a smart move. Try and get the unions back on your side because the union membership was at least 50% for Trump.
And to Joe and Matt as well, The president talked about one of his big successes so far in his administration. That's the infrastructure bill, and saying, you know, hey, Republicans, even if you didn't vote for this, I'm still going to go and be at the groundbreaking for your event. When Bill McCosham was Secretary of Commerce, he was more popular than Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, and the Leprechaun of St. Patrick's Day combined. Because every place you saw Secretary Bill McCosham, he was holding a great big oversized check for hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million. You go out to Yuba, Wisconsin, Bill McCosham doesn't have to buy himself a beer. Why are Democrats, I don't care whether it's Tony Evers or Joe Biden, why are Democrats so damn terrible at promoting themselves? They can't tell their own story to save their life. And this is killing Joe Biden's reelection chances.
Well, first of all, that's fantastic. And I'm sorry that now that he has to hang out with me on the radio and TV sometimes, I'm dragging Bill's Q rating down.
You're fine.
But I actually thought one of the better moments of the speech tonight was President Biden sort of gently kidding with Republicans in Congress who
Absolutely.
Voted against the infrastructure law and was able to kind of cheekily turn to him and say, that's all right. I'll see you at the groundbreaking.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is Joe Biden at his absolute best. And you know what? Whether it's Pete Buttigieg, Secretary of Transportation, or Jennifer Granholm, Secretary of Energy, I don't know who the next Secretary of Labor is going to be now that Marty Walsh is heading to Bill's part of the country and getting involved in hockey. But you're absolutely right. Democrats should be out there holding shovels in hand, handing out big checks, posing for holy pictures, because as the president said tonight, 20,000 projects across the country have already been funded from, I think he said, you know, Florida to Massachusetts to Portland or, you know, thereabouts. And so, yeah, Democrats need to be able to say they're the ones that got this done. Donald Trump talked a lot of talk about infrastructure, but he couldn't get it done. Joe Biden did.
Matt, any further comments on that?
A couple of things. First of all, Bill McCosham, I was hoping you were running for governor. I think you would have been the strongest candidate. I'm not kidding on that side.
I'd agree on that with the Republicans.
Well,
absolutely.
You guys are killing me tonight.
Tommy Thompson.
My political career is now over. Thanks.
That kind of Republicanism was attractive to people. But remember, the flip side is Republican Party passed right to work, outlawed unions, and passed Act 10. So when you say everybody votes for them among labor, it's not as
much
as you say. No, but let me hear me out. The second thing, though, is that Joe Biden is a different kind of Democrat. He really is. I mean, he is a labor Democrat from Pennsylvania and Delaware and all that. Labor people like him, and there's no BS about the guy. And I think that Joe is exactly
Matt,
right.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut you short, though. The Republican response is about to begin.
They know it, and you know it. And it's time for a change. Tonight, let us reaffirm our commitment to a timeless American idea that government exists not to rule the people, but to serve the people. Democrats want to rule us with more government control, but that's not who we are. America is the greatest country the world has ever known because we're the freest country the world has ever known, with a people who are strong and resilient. 5 months ago, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. It was a hard time for our family, particularly our kids, Scarlett, Huck, and George. But we kept our faith and persevered. Thanks to exceptional doctors here in Arkansas, a successful surgery, and the grace of God, I am cancer-free. Through it all, I couldn't help but think about my mom. She was 20 years old and into her first year of marriage when she was diagnosed with spinal cancer. The doctors told her she might not live, and if she did live, they said she'd never walk again. And if she did walk, she'd definitely never have children. The daughter she was told she'd never have was just sworn in as the new governor of Arkansas and is speaking to you tonight. Adversity and fear of the unknown can paralyze us, but faith propels us to charge boldly ahead. We can't stand still in the face of great challenges. You and I were put on this earth for such a time as this, to charge boldly ahead. I'll be the first to admit, President Biden and I don't have a lot in common. I'm for freedom, he's for government control. At 40, I'm the youngest governor in the country. And at 80, he's the oldest president in American history. I'm the first woman to lead my state, and he's the first man to surrender his presidency to a woke mob that can't even tell you what a woman is. In the radical left's America, Washington taxes you and lights your hard-earned money on fire. But you get crushed with high gas prices, empty grocery shelves, and our children are taught to hate one another on account of their race, but not to love one another or our great country. Whether Joe Biden believes this madness or is simply too weak to resist it, his administration has been completely hijacked by the radical left. The dividing line in America is no longer between right or left. The choice is between normal or crazy. It's time for a new generation of Republican leadership. Upon taking office just a few weeks ago, I signed executive orders to ban CRT, racism, and indoctrination in our schools, eliminate the use of derogatory term Latinx in our government, repealed COVID orders and said never again to authoritarian mandates and shutdowns. Americans want common sense from their leaders, but in Washington, the Biden administration is doubling down on crazy. President Biden inherited the fastest economic recovery on record, the most secure border in history, cheap, abundant, homegrown energy, fast rising wages, a rebuilt military, and a world that was stable and at peace. But over the last 2 years, Democrats destroyed it all. Despite Democrats' trillions in reckless spending and mountains of debt, we now have the worst border crisis in American history. As a mom, my heart breaks for every parent who has lost a son or daughter to addiction. 100,000 Americans a year are now killed from drug overdoses, largely from fentanyl pouring across our southern border. Yet the Biden administration refuses to secure the border and save American lives. And after years of Democrat attacks on law enforcement and calls to defund the police, violent criminals roam free while law-abiding families live in fear. Beyond our border, from Afghanistan to Ukraine, from North Korea to Iran, President Biden's weakness puts our nation and the world at risk. And the president's refusal to stand up to China, our most formidable adversary, is dangerous and unacceptable. President Biden is unwilling to defend our border, defend our skies, and defend our people. He is simply unfit to serve as commander-in-chief. And while you reap the consequences of their failures, the Biden administration seems more interested in woke fantasies than the hard reality Americans face every day. Most Americans simply want to live their lives in freedom and peace. But we are under attack in a left-wing culture war we didn't start and never wanted to fight. Every day we are told we must partake in their rituals, salute their flags, and worship their false idols. All while big government colludes with big tech to strip away the most American thing there is, your freedom of speech. That's not normal. It's crazy. And it's wrong. Make no mistake, Republicans will not surrender this fight. We will lead with courage and do what's right, not what's politically correct or convenient. Republicans believe in an America where strong families thrive in safe communities, where jobs are abundant and paychecks are rising, where the freedom our veterans shed their blood to defend is the birthright of every man, woman, and child. These are the principles Republican governors are fighting for, and in Washington, under the leadership of Senate Republicans and Speaker Kevin McCarthy, we will hold the Biden administration accountable. Down the street from where I sit is my alma mater, Little Rock Central High. As a student there, I will never forget watching my dad, Governor Mike Huckabee, and President Bill Clinton hold the doors open to the Little Rock Nine. Doors that 40 years earlier had been closed to them because they were Black. Today, those children once barred from the schoolhouse are now heroes memorialized in bronze at our state house. I'm proud of the progress our country has made, and I believe giving every child access to a quality education, regardless of their race or income, is the civil rights issue of our day. Tomorrow, I will unveil an education package that will be the most far-reaching, bold, conservative education reform in the country. My plan empowers parents with real choices, improves literacy and career readiness, and helps put a good teacher in every classroom by increasing their starting salary from one of the lowest to one of the highest in the nation. Here in Arkansas and across America, Republicans are working to end the policy of trapping kids in failing schools and sentencing them to a lifetime of poverty. We will educate, not indoctrinate our kids, and put students on a path to success. It's time for a new generation to lead. This is our moment. This is our opportunity. A new generation born in the waning decades of the last century, shaped by economic booms and stock market busts, forged by the triumph of the Cold War and the tragedy of 9/11. A generation brimming with passion and new ideas to solve age-old problems. A generation moored to our deepest values and oldest traditions, yet unafraid to challenge the present order and find a better way forward. If we seize this moment together, America can once again be the land of the free and the home of the brave. During my 2.5 years at the White House, I traveled on every foreign trip with the president. A trip I will never forget was on December 25th of 2018. My husband Brian and I had just cleaned up wrapping paper that was shoved into every corner of our house, thanks to our three kids. When I had to walk out on my own family's Christmas, unable to tell them where I was going that night, because the place I'd be traveling was so dangerous, they didn't want anybody to know that the president was going to be on the ground, even for a few hours. We boarded Air Force One in complete and total darkness. There were no lights on the plane, no lights on the runway. Our phones and computers shut down and turned in. We were going completely off the grid. Nearly 12 hours later, in the pitch black of night, we landed in the war-torn part of Western Iraq. It was again a similar scene. No lights on the plane, no lights on the runway. The only thing you could see was coming from about a mile away in a dining hall where hundreds of troops who were in the fight against ISIS had gathered expecting to celebrate Christmas with senior military leadership from around the region. They had absolutely no idea that the president and first lady were about to walk into that room. And when they did, it was a sight and a scene and a sound I hope I never forget. The room erupted. Men and women from every race, religion, and region, every political party, every demographic you can imagine, started chanting in perfect unison over and over and over again, USA, USA, USA. It was an absolutely perfect picture of what makes our country great. one of the young soldiers yelled from the back, "Mr. President,
Evan.
I re-enlisted in the military because of you." And the president said, "And son, I'm here because of you." Shortly after,
Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, we want to thank.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.